Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, September 17th, 2009. This is Doug Kelly, your host, here with Grant Rudin, the Dunstate Grant.
Hey, good evening, everybody. So nice to be with you again.
Yes, here we are, back again with yet another show, and we've got an excellent topic tonight. We're going to talk about bringing credibility to the anomalous research field. And before we get into that, just wanted to make a cool announcement. I've posted it on the website, but as many of you know, we had filed for our articles of incorporation as a Florida nonprofit corporation. We just got those filed yesterday, were approved, so we are now officially a incorporated nonprofit, and we're excited about that. We're about ready to adopt a new set of bylaws. I've been working on those all week, and so we'll be adopting those Sunday night, and I'll be publishing those on the website. And then we get to do the 501c3 application, and we'll be doing that over the next month, it looks like. So we're really making some progress and going through
come a long way.
Yeah, we really have, and yep. So we're excited about that. And we encourage everyone who is not a member of Paranexus to come and join us and join in the vision. You know, grow with us, because I think Paranexus offers the field something that is uncommon, and that is just, you know, just a slightly different approach. You know, the scientific, but yet grounded, stable, open-minded, without preconceived notions. I mean, a lot of folks who've been with us this far are well aware of that approach, and there's a lot of folks who have it, but we just got such a great group of people, and we'd love to have you and share your expertise. Tonight, if you've got questions, we'd love to have you join us in the chat room, or if you want to call, you can do that too. If you have a question for our guests, the number is 347-945-7799. It's on your screen. You can also use that click the talk button if you have a headset on your computer. And so let's introduce our guests tonight. We have Jennifer Lauer with us. She is the founder of the Southern Wisconsin Paranormal Research Group. And she's joined us kind of with short notice. Hey, Jen, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's nice to have you.
And
thank you.
And also joining us tonight is her science and technology advisor, Dave Schumacher. Hey, Dave, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Nice to have you, Dave.
Now, it's interesting how I learned of Jen, and you all know, Camille, who does our anomalous news, she posted an article that Jen had written, and I went and read it, and I was really impressed with it, and read another article and was impressed with that, and then visited Jen's website and was impressed with their approach. And so I shot her an email and said, hey, great job, and by the way, you free Thursday night? And she said, sure. Glutton for
it was that big check we offered you, right,
yeah.
Jen?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, we really appreciate it. So, you wrote this article about bringing credibility to the anomalous research field or something thereabouts, but you guys also have a book, right? So why don't you tell everybody about your website, URL, and your book name, and that'll start us off.
Okay. Well, I founded the Southern Wisconsin Paranormal Research Group. So the website is either paranormalresearchgroup.com or WPRG.com. Either one will get you there. And I recently, well, not recently, about 3 years ago, co-authored the book Investigating the Haunted, Ghost Hunting Taken to the Next Level with Dave Schumacher, who's with us tonight. We have been using this. It's more of a textbook for advanced paranormal research. So it's more taking people out of the ghost hunting stage and taking them more into the paranormal investigation realm.
That's cool. And by the way, she also wrote a great article on the difference between ghost hunters, paranormal researchers, and parapsychologists. And one of the things that really impressed me, Jen, was your willingness to say, hey, you know, ghost hunters, stop it, in so many words. You know, I mean, you pegged them. I mean, you know, amateurs and thrill of the hunt, weekend warriors, you know, not serious. And
you I've been know dealing with these people for so long.
Yeah.
It's just easier to just, I'm a very say it as it is kind of person, you know. And I think this field really needs that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's just too many people portraying, you know, taking the TV shows and thinking they know everything and running off with it. It's just really, really hard to get the real work out there.
Well, you know, the good part about that, though, I suppose, is those groups pop up, and they seem, as quickly as they seem to pop up, they go away sometimes, too. Because those kind of folks don't have the hardcore people like we do, and I'm sure in your group do, that stick around. I mean, there's nothing exciting or dramatic about packing stuff up at 2 o'clock in the morning and heading home on an hour drive.
Right.
Or being lost after an investigation at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's never happened to us.
Never.
I hear you there.
A lot of glamorous things that happen doing this kind of work.
Yeah. Well, the real bummer about that is that, you know, those new groups are taking away really good cases from people that could really do good work with them.
And sometimes screwing them up.
Yeah, well, you know, you're looking at those clients. Those clients are looking at you, saying, you know, or some wannabe, and thinking, what's going on at my house? And you know, you pick up a EMF meter or you know something like go buy a few spots, get a big old a spike, you know, in the EMF, and right away think it's a ghost, and then they tell the homeowner that, and they're freaked out.
Yeah,
it's a really bad situation.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we've seen more damage done, and our creed is do no harm. And, you know, a lot of times, and it's not done out of malice, it's done out of ignorance.
It's not intentional at all, no.
Yep.
Well,
then, of course, I was just going to say, then, of course, Doug, if you got somebody there that sees a demon at every door, under every bed, then you got real difficulties.
Yeah. You're screwed. You might as well just give it up.
Oh.
All right, so, Jen, how'd you get started in this? It's 10 years.
Well, actually, it's been, I think most of you would probably agree that it's been a lifelong type fascination for you.
Yep.
You know, I guess my dad, I grew up with my dad, just me and my dad, and he was just so into everything weird and strange. Yeah, aliens, out-of-body experiences, just weird and everything, you know, and everything and anything. And I kind of grew up with that mentality. And one time he took me to see a movie when I was about 8 years old. And it was a documentary called Beyond and Back. And it was about people who died and come back to talk about their experiences. And I think that's pretty much what hooked me to really want to do more work in this field. And as I grew up, you know, everything... Going through college, every time I had to write a paper about something, it was always something to do with paranormal or weird, something strange or odd. And it just never went away, even as I got into adulthood. So I think, you know, I just decided this is what I want to do with my life, and didn't know that there was people out there that did that, you know?
Yeah.
Never knew that. This was before all the ghost hunting shows. This was before.
Yep.
Before even a lot of the, you know, like the scariest places on earth shows back when, you know, and before, well, right when internet was getting popular and you didn't know how to get a hold of people like that. And so.
Well, let's ask Dave the same thing. We'll get him in on this. How did you start in this, Dave?
So
Oh, I have to say again, the lifelong pursuit ever since I was a little kid. I always liked watching the scary movies and reading the books. And when I got older, got into high school, I came across a book by Lloyd Auerbach, ESP, Hauntings and Poltergeists, a parapsychologist handbook, and looked at it and thought, wow, there's people that actually do this for real and put a scientific edge to it, and you can get a degree in it and, you know, go ahead and do investigations and write a book. So at that point, I'd have to say it took a little bit more of a serious scientific approach for me. It went from just wanting to hear the stories and experience stuff to, you know, really trying to figure out what's going on, be it, you know, perfectly normal or paranormal. I didn't really care. I just wanted to have a better idea of what was going on out there. Because, you know, there's enough people over many, many years and centuries, actually, that have had enough experiences that there's got to be something going on. And even if it isn't really paranormal, there's enough interesting phenomena going on, or the way these people perceive things, that I can look at it even from a psychological, environmental aspect, which was still interesting. So continuing on, I went to undergraduate, and when I did my degree in biology and psychology, I still kept the interest alive, read as much as I could, started to get more, a little bit more into the psychological aspects of it. Cool. And then that just continued on when I went through graduate school. And then I think it was 6-7 years ago, I met up with Jen and joined her group.
Wow, that's great. So let's focus on this credibility thing. I know we've talked about the amateur side of things, but what factors, Jen, would you say lead to a lack of credibility? And what could we do to raise this?
I think the main thing is education. To educate yourself in all aspects of, you know, even if it doesn't sound like it could be something that is paranormal related, like geology. You know, I mean, we know that there is, you know, different stones, different rocks that hold different charges that can emit and then cause you to have a spike. If you're well aware of those types of natural phenomena that can cause people to perceive a type of haunting, or if they want to, you know, however they want to describe it, you know, if you're well aware of those other areas, then you're able to, you know, determine that it could be a natural cause rather than a paranormal one.
And, you know, if I could just interrupt you, I think you make a great point there that I think is lost on so many in the field. You know, whatever your area of expertise is, you can bring that to the field. Just like you said, a geologist. I mean, who would have thunk, you know, that would have even applied? But whatever your special area of expertise or special areas are, bring them to the table, because it affords you a different lens in which to look through.
So exactly.
You go
Good
ahead.
Point. I just, you know, that would be my number one thing. Just become educated. Get well-versed in the literature of, you know, especially psychology, abnormal psychology, you know, anomalous psychology, you know, just everything. Even environmental, you know, types of, you know, conditions that can cause things to happen. You know, anything. Just always be looking for the natural, you know, over the paranormal first, I think, it's just an essential.
Mm-hmm. Dave, any comments?
Well, I'll come at it from the technological standpoint. Just one of the things that always is going to kill your credibility is if you tell people you have a ghost detector. Now, if any one of us had a ghost detector, we'd be making a heck of a lot more money than sitting here doing this tonight. But the fact is that those things were designed to detect other things, and you got to know that that's what they're for. You got to be able to know how to use them, how to interpret it, and what it means. Nothing kind of tweaks me more than watching, you know, some of the TV shows, and they're walking around with a non-contact infrared thermometer, and they're waving it all over, and all of a sudden they have a cold spot, and it's a ghost. Well, no, actually, you just hit the window or the brick wall that's colder. So the fact of the matter is, you know, you got to know how to use your equipment, and you got to know what it means and how to interpret those readings. And that's really going to bring a lot more credibility. I mean, Jen mentioned the fact that people walk around and they go by a fuse box and they get a huge EMF field and they say it's a, you know, there's a demon in the house. It's like, well, you might want to think about that before you go tell the homeowner who's already scared out of their mind about what's going on. And, you know, doing those little things and just telling people the way it is and knowing what you're doing and how to use the equipment from a technological standpoint, it'll bring a lot more credibility to your group.
And, you know, in that, go ahead, Grant. You...
I was just going to say, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, people really have to, and I can tell just by what you just talked about, Dave, is the fact that that people really have to examine their belief system. The members of the team really have to be in tune with where they're coming from. Because if you go into any investigation with preconceived notions, you're already biased, and anything data that you capture you think is significant is already invalid.
Amen.
Yeah, and that's very true. But the thing I like to play devil's advocate on that is that, you know, you can be biased in the other direction, where if
absolutely.
You're strictly
working absolutely.
Off the equipment and stuff, I mean, and you don't believe anything, you may discount stuff that really needs to be looked at.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so
right.
it kind of goes both ways. But
it's
a
double-edged
totally
sword, absolutely,
you.
Yeah. You know, if you have people that, you know, we've had our most problems with the Ghostbusters it has been with people that have told folks things like, you have a demon in your house and you need to get an exorcist. And to me, that is just like, once again, I don't think it's done out of malice. I think it's done out of a good intent. But the road to hell is paved with good intent sometimes. And what happens with these folks is... you know, they scare their clients, and the reason why they scare the client is I think it's largely because that's based on their own belief system that they can't recognize and how it's influenced
right.
them in the investigation.
Right.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is interesting is I know there's a group in the UK that every time they do an investigation, everybody on the team who was involved in it is required to take this questionnaire called the Paranormal Belief Scale. So they can kind of get a gauge where people are as far as their beliefs in the paranormal as they are with the people on the team. So they kind of know how it's being approached by their own team members, which is an interesting approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to mention that too, that whole the demon thing. And I will just reiterate, you know, Paranexus takes a firm position on such things as demons and, well, especially demons, for simple reasons. Number one, it's a religious construct. Secondly, it promotes fear. And we take a very firm position against any kind of promoting of fear. And, in fact, our website awards, you know, if a group has a website that talks about, you know, be careful of demons, you know, or they're out to get you, or, you know, the dangers of ghosts, you know, we don't give them an award. Sorry. Nothing that promotes fear.
Right. That's one of the biggest questions I've been asked. How do I know if something's not going to hurt me? You know, I've been doing this for a really long time. I've never been hurt.
Yeah.
And I'm the one chasing them. You know,
yeah,
so,
really.
You know, so if anybody's going to get hurt, it'd probably be me. But I've never had anything happen to me that I could not explain naturally. You know.
It's so much. It's just
there's that much. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, if there's that, you know, kind of stuff going on, like in the movie The Exorcist, I don't think any one of us would still be in this.
Oh, I would.
We'd be plum tuckered out after a year, right? We would be around for dead.
You make a really good point on the belief system, because I know Jen, one of the cases, and I think it was either Oak Creek or Franklin, where it was a fairly religious family, and they were sure they had demons in the house, and they called and, you know, come out right away, and Jen goes out there right away. We go out there, check it out. And most likely what it seemed like it was doing after a little bit of talking to them and figuring out what might be happening, it sounded more like RSPK or poltergeist activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just because of their belief system being very religious, Roman Catholic, it had to be a demon. And unfortunately, because they didn't like that explanation, they never contacted us again.
Well, yeah, they want somebody to confirm their beliefs.
Exactly, yeah. That's really interesting.
And, you know, again, getting back to credibility, the credibility is if you really want to help those people, telling them it's a demon or trying to reaffirm that for them is not going to make the phenomenon go away. if it truly is poltergeist or RSPK, you got to recognize it and you got to deal with the individual situation and the stresses that are causing the problem, and then it'll go away. But just saying it's a demon and getting an exorcism, that's not going to help.
Well, it goes back to what Jen said, you know, education, and that's an obligation on the part of serious researchers is to coach and educate the client. That's what it's about.
Right. And I've had clients who, you know, they want me to sit there and tell them that they have a ghost. And we have a written report that we, you know, during the reveal, we give them a written report. We put any EVP or any kind of data that we've collected that's significant on a disc, and we show them everything. And I sit there, and I'll sit there for an hour or two if I have to, just to explain to them what exactly that we collected. You know, and I always put on there, you know, that this doesn't necessarily mean you have a haunted house. It means it's similar to other cases that have been reported haunted. Or if it is, you know, I will never say anything is haunted, just because of the fact that we really don't know what a ghost is yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if there is one, how can, you know, you really can't identify it.
And how can you tell the difference between a true ghost or spirit haunting and RSPK, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Because what if the RSPK, what if humans, I mean, and this is nothing new, but what if humans have the innate ability to be able to move things? And when we do move things, or somebody does have the ability to do that, to briefly harness it, they misinterpret it as ghosts or spirits.
Well, that happens
a lot. And a lot of times you'll find that even if there might be some sort of apparition or intelligence behind the haunting, or maybe there isn't and people are just misinterpreting things, that will build up their fear and stress levels, and that can result in them showing RSPK, and then it just starts feeding on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wonderful world, isn't it?
Well,
it's certainly fascinating. I mean, you know,
it is.
Because you've got human psychology at play here, you have actual body's physiological response at play, and then you have environmental factors that could be affecting not only how the body is reacting chemically or biochemically, but also how it's affected for perception. So it's a fascinating phenomenon that, you know, we're just going to have to keep investigating.
Yeah.
There's nothing else we can do.
That's right.
But, you know, another thing that Paranexus is really trying to push and promote and develop is, in essence, reinventing the field, you know, in our approach, because I'm tired of doing the same old thing and getting the same old thing. You know, it's like, let's rethink this. You know, Dave, you mentioned the psychological factor. We have talked about that time and time again on this program, and there's so much psychology to the anomalous research field, and you know what, 90% of the cases, you know, the demons are in their head and nowhere else. Well, you know, there's natural explanations. There's you know, drug abuse, alcohol abuse. There's just abuse, you know, physical abuse.
Yeah.
There's dysfunctional families, dysfunctional people. And all those things contribute to funky things going on. And so,
well, that's interesting.
Go ahead, Jen.
I was going to say that's interesting that you say that, because Dave had developed a question set for anyone interested in doing an investigation with us. And it was based on psychological profiles of their belief system. And Dave, if you want to explain that a little bit more, exactly what it detected, but it gave us a better idea of who they are and, mm-hmm. you know, in the situation that we were walking into. Dave, do you want to explain that? Oh, sorry.
Sure. Basically, what I did is took a look at a bunch of the different published question sets and questionnaires that have been out in the psychological and parapsychological
right.
literature, and these are all things that have been validated and shown, mm-hmm. you know, through various studies to basically give you the thing you're looking for. So I put the one together that I thought would help us the most, and that gives us a feel, like Jen said, on what their belief system is, how they interpret certain things, how they interpret ambiguous situations, which is huge, because you find, for example, that people who have more paranormal experiences have a lower tolerance of ambiguity, and they're always trying to find reason to it. We give them a schizotypal personality test, and that would be one of the ones where it kind of raises the flag. It's like, okay, we're not clinicians, but based on this test, you know, what we're saying is you probably should go talk to a doctor before you come to us. And we have a couple other ones. There's a new one that we've used, like a transliminality scale, and this is a scale that measures the ability of people to have information flow from their subconscious to their consciousness and their consciousness to their subconsciousness. Hmm. And it is interesting, if you look at the studies out there, it shows that definitely people who have more, say they have more paranormal experiences, they have a different threshold in this transliminality scale. Hmm. So these are all tools that we can, you know, give these people. It's a lot of questions, but it gives you a lot of information on basically how they perceive and interpret things and what their belief systems are. And if there's any, like, major red flags that we would say, listen, you know, we're not doubting something, you're experiencing something, but at this point we think you probably should go talk to your family physician or, you know, get a medical advice consult before we'll go any further. And again, that's a huge credibility thing too.
It is.
To realize when you are not qualified to do it, and you will get yourself in trouble if you're trying to take on a situation that needs to be dealt with by the medical establishment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We've actually been able to identify individuals with epilepsy before going in, you know, and that would be a really terrible situation to walk into because they are experiencing things, or, you know, time warps and that type of thing. And
well, if they have temporal lobe epilepsy, they can have some real interesting hallucinations, yeah.
Right, and, you know, we can refuse them, say, on the basis of medical, you know, problems. And it, like Dave said, it's a big part of it is knowing when to take a case, and that was part of the article as well, choosing your cases.
Yeah. Specifically, we do have a scale just for that, the temporal lobe sign scale, which will pretty much give you, based on the studies and the cutoff points, if it is somebody who's having, you know, issues with that. But on the other hand, people who tend to have more paranormal experiences, which they can validate and be a little more realistic, they also score higher on there. So it's kind of like you got to look at the entire picture, because some of these characteristics, while they may enable the people to have more paranormal experiences for whatever reason, but there can also be the flip side that, you know, whatever's going on in their head is actually, you know, just in their head.
Well, I think you make a great point for the whole theme, you know, the credibility and what you're talking about, knowing when you're not qualified or when something else needs to happen first. That's just responsible actions, you know, being
well,
responsible.
That's professionalism. That's being professional enough to identify the fact that you're not, this is out of your realm of capability. So, you know, do the right thing and need to refer them to somebody who can pick up the ball from there.
A lot of times it's an ego issue.
Yeah, absolutely. No. You know, the one thing I'd be interested to find out, Jen, is, you know, we've kind of evolved over the time that we first started this, and you know, we pale in comparison to the number of years that we've been doing it to your number of years. But how is your team, how would you say your team has evolved, or how your approach has evolved from, say, when you first started as opposed to how you operate now or approach an investigation?
I'm very big on change. I am.
Good for you. Good for you.
I really think that in order to get anywhere in this field, we need to progress. And, you know, even if it sounds silly or stupid or whatever, let's try it. You never know what you're going to come across.
Yeah.
You know? And just to try different things. And one of the things that we do and that has been an ongoing thing for us is that we actually do testing. We, we use the scientific method, which is, I'm not even going to get into it, but it is one of my biggest pet peeves when all these groups say that they're scientific, but
right.
They don't use the scientific method or the scientific process. I mean, it's a specific process that you have to go through, which includes, you know, testing hypotheses and getting information,
mm-hmm.
and observing, you know, and all that stuff. And it's such an important process. It's the only way we're going to really get anywhere is to test these hypotheses that people have. And we've been doing that. We actually have a couple different research projects that Dave actually has had published in a couple peer-reviewed journals and in some scientific journals that he did an awesome job at. I think that just to keep progressing in the field, keep learning new things, you know, changing your mind is not a bad thing. You know, I've got research articles that go back from when we first started that I look back and laugh. I'm like, oh my God, was that me? Oh, geez. You know, mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed, you know. And I've even had people email me before and say, you know, I just read your article dated back in 2002 about this. And I'm like, yeah, that was 2002.
Yeah, really?
About that one, yeah.
A whole lifetime ago.
But you can actually look at our case files and see how we've developed over the years and, mm-hmm. you know, how we've changed our ways. And I think that's important. I think to answer your question, you know, you just got to keep looking and keep searching and trying new things.
And that's exactly another point of credibility. You know, you have to evolve. You have to try new things. You have to change. You have to rethink what's out there. I mean, don't be afraid to rethink what even the so-called bigwigs in the field spout. Just
don't think in the box.
One of the things that always I look at some people and you say, okay, why are you doing that? Well, because everybody else does. Well, okay, it doesn't mean they're right.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I mean, how many people still think that the Trifield natural meter only picks up paranormal activity, only changes in magnetic fields associated? Well, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And then there's the other side of it where people think it doesn't pick up any man-made stuff. So they're like, well, okay, if it's not picking up man-made stuff, it's got to be either, you know, natural magnetic fields or a ghost. Well, I don't know. We didn't buy that. So we did a study where we actually played around with that that natural meter and found out that, guess what? It does detect changes in the man-made field.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you turn on something or turn it off, that's a pulse. Mm-hmm. It's a pulse in a static field. And that thing picks up changes in the static field. So it's not only picking up whatever paranormal mm-hmm. magnetic fields and filtering all man-made stuff. So you look at that, and it's like, you know, all these people kept saying this is only picking up that. It's just like, you know what? Don't be afraid to test that, because I'm going to guarantee that 90% of the claims out there by the so-called some of the experts, they haven't been tested.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it is amazing.
Or if they have, they certainly haven't been replicated.
Exactly. And another example, I mean, from a technology thing, you guys may have seen it, is, and I can't remember his name, I'm sorry, he's out on the East Coast. He did a real nice study showing that those non-contact thermometers, if you shoot that beam through, let's say, a cold area that's coming off of a block of dry ice,
mm-hmm.
it does not read the temperature of that mm-hmm. cold air coming off that block of dry mm-hmm. ice. It reads the temperature of what it hits.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that people still only use one of those non-contact thermometers, it just blows my mind. It's like,
honestly,
well, if you want to use them,
useful.
Well, yeah, they look cool.
Yeah,
like a laser gun, and it looks like a gun. But if you're going to use them, at least carry an ambient air thermometer with you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ways that people are progressing. But it's just, you know, like we have all said here, don't be afraid to ask questions and test things.
Well, you know, one of the things, what I was going to say, Jen, is how we kind of evolved is when we first started out, we had a lot more people. We were more
And that's what spirit
prone. Yeah, that was with the spirit team a couple of years ago. More prone to do a lot of pre-test, post-test, all that kind of thing. But, you know, lately, the way we approached, we kind of evolved to the point where we felt that if there was anything going on in a place where we're going to do an investigation, perhaps it might recede just by our sheer presence in there, you know. And so we just came in with fewer people. Most of the time it's just Doug, myself, and one of our sensitives or psychics. And I think we've just had better results that way. I think with people walking around with meters bumping into each other, and not to say that we still don't do baseline readings and some other things.
Too many cooks kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
These are based on very dynamic processes that involve, you know, social, psychosocial dynamics, environment, interactions between different people and conditions. And, well, yeah, obviously if you have 20 people that charge into a house running around, it's going to disrupt the conditions under which these things happen.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, and which is kind of scary when you see a lot of these Ghostbuster groups just, you know, we've done seminars at supposedly haunted hotels, and you'll see folks that have come there that day, and, I mean, they're just bumping into each other with the meters, and probably part of the problem is the wiring is so bad in some of those old hotels where you're getting, you know, just incredible spikes all over the place, but it's a ghost.
Hey, Jen, here's a question from the chat room on medications, and one of your members had indicated to the positive, but how do you factor in prescription medications in your discovery, you know, when your client interviews and so forth?
Actually, we ask that in our question set. We find that a lot of people are not honest with us with that. We've actually went into investigations and went into somebody's bedroom and seen like just a lineup of different, you know, pharmaceutical bottles on somebody's nightstand. And, you know, you kind of take a look. And actually, Dave is a pharmaceutical sales rep, so he's very familiar with a lot of the different types of medication and what they can do. So,
that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, Jen, you know, we don't require them to answer that, but we prefer they do. I mean, we definitely keep everything confidential.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we all know, we're none of us are physicians here. So, but the fact is, like Jen said, if we come into a situation where they said they weren't taking anything, and we've had this where we walk through and just happen to notice, and I'm not kidding, 15 different prescription bottles next to the bed.
Mm.
And it's everything from antipsychotic to depression to blood pressure to sleeping aids. It's like, okay. Kind of puts a whole new light on what's happening.
I'd be
situation.
Seeing ghosts too.
Yeah. Give me some of that. I'll see some.
Yeah.
I still think, you know, even though we're not playing the role of physician, I think it really behooves any kind of team to be somewhat familiar with some of the major brands of psychotropic medications. There's no doubt about that. You know, and most people, you know, would recognize that. You know, if you're asking somebody a question of what kind of medications they're taking, if they just like give you a lineup of a whole regime of antipsychotics or there are other type of meds.
Well, there's a lot of meds out there that can cause vivid dreaming too, and
absolutely.
You know. And people have gotten so many cases about, you know, like just sleep paralysis. You know, peg syndrome, exactly. And you know, if you know the type of drugs they're on, you can pretty much tell if they're having kind of vivid dreaming going on or whatnot. But you know, get those. You know, I've been visited by aliens. Are you sure? What kind of drugs? Like those? You know, and they actually do. They feel that you're being critical to them when you're asking that, but it's really important just to say, you know, this is not a judgment on you or anything like that, but we just explain to them the fact that, you know, we are very familiar with the fact that it's possible for you to have different chemical reactions in your brain because you take certain medications. It has nothing to do with your mental stability or anything like that, you know, so don't think that we're, you know, thinking that you're crazy or anything, because we're not, you know, but we do know that you know, chemicals can cause different reactions in different people, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's just important to be upfront with these people and be.
Well, that's really a great point. That's really a great point because, you know, Jen, a lot of people will take all these medications and they're in combination and they may see more than one doctor, and you know what? The doctors aren't even aware of what they're giving them, so they could be having all kinds of side effects, and most folks, I think, are pretty compliant. And if your doctor tells you to take a pill, they'll take the pill.
Right.
And that's the point where obviously we're not going to consult them what the side effects are, but we're going to probably tell them, you know what, you probably should talk to your doctor about what's been going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, tell them everything you're taking and tell them what's going on.
Yeah, good. Excellent point. And then see, that's another area of credibility and responsibility is...
And overall professionalism
is not going overstepping your bounds. If you don't, if you honestly, if you're not qualified to make recommendations and that sort of thing, don't do it. You know, refer them to a professional, somebody that can do that.
And another point is, I think it's important for people to realize that it's okay to say, I don't know, you know, but I will look into it. You know, I mean, I think people will take you a lot more seriously if you can say, you know what, that's a great question, and I don't know, I can't answer that right now, but I will look into it, and I will help you as much as I can. And I think if people, you know, instead of somebody saying, oh, well, it's this or it's that, or, you know, and not really even pay attention to what they're saying, because they know everything right away, it's hard. You know, it's hard for that person to believe you because, oh, he says he knows everything now. Well, I heard on TV this, and I heard on TV that, or my friend told me this. And, you know, at least if you're able to say, you know, I don't know, but I'll look into it. I'll find out for you. At least they'll take you a little more seriously. So, oh, okay. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah,
good advice
there. And just for our listeners, apparently Skype's going through some atmospheric wavelengths here. It's kind of fading in and out a little bit, but it comes and goes, so bear with us. So, all right, so we're talking about bringing credibility to the field. Let's ask this question. You see, let's just say that somebody's brand new to this. They've had a lifelong interest, but now they're ready to do something in the field. What kind of recommendations, Jen, would you offer to them as just some good points to get started? What should they do so that they can be the best at what they do?
Well, look into, I mean, a lot of people don't want to start something that they're not very familiar with, so you may want to be interested in joining another group that's already well established. But if you're going to do that, make sure that it's a group that's well versed in the literature, that is very credible, you know, and it may take some research. Sometimes it you may have difficulty finding somebody in your area because of lack of, you know, different groups in different areas. But as I said earlier, I think just becoming more educated in the field, you know, get online. Look at some of the more, look more into parapsychology, because they're going to direct you into some of the areas that these ghost groups won't. You know, even some of the natural phenomenon that's caused by these things can really, really set your mind, you know, kind of in a curious state. And I think to be a critical thinker is very important. You know, you need to be able to critically think through a lot of process and not just believe everything that you're hearing and seeing on TV and that type of thing.
One of the things, Jen, I think if it's still on the website, and I'm sorry, I haven't looked lately, but we used to have a recommended reading list of different books and journals that people could go to and get good information.
Right.
And, you know, being the science nerd, I mean, I'm always looking for stuff to read. So that's one of the things I always tell people. It's like, okay, well, if you're interested in this, go check this out and read a little bit more about it. The other thing, you know, that we always try to ask people is, well, what do you want out of it? It's really going to dictate what you should do. I mean, if you're just in it for thrills and to go experience something, well, okay, then go to some public places and go on the ghost hunt tours or whatever and have a good time. But if you're really interested in it, if you want to be a paranormal investigator and be serious, then yeah, you gotta become knowledgeable, and then like Jen said, definitely, you know, look for a group that kind of fits what you're looking for and it'll guide you along.
And of course, I gotta chime in here and say, you know, go visit paranexus.org. You know, come and join
us,
because that's what we're for. I mean, it's education and research, and we're not a group per se in the traditional sense, but we're an association of researchers. We also have field investigator opportunities for people too. So,
right.
You know, that's
also awesome. Great.
You know, toot our horn there.
Yeah.
Got to do it.
And I'm going to do the same. Actually, if you're in the Midwest area, Wisconsin, Illinois area, my group and I teach paranormal education at McHenry County College in Crystal Lake, Illinois, and also Rock Valley College in Rockford, Illinois. And we teach them every semester as two Saturdays, and just gives you a really great rundown of all of the different areas of what we teach, you know, parapsychology, ghost hunting, paranormal investigation, everything. It just, and it's fun.
And here's, go ahead, Dave.
It'll be more fun. It'll be more fun and nobody will sleep because I don't think I'm teaching this year.
Well, you know, Jen, you alluded to something earlier, and I want to point that out as another tip for not only new researchers, but seasoned researchers, and that is to become well-rounded in the field. In other words, don't just focus on ghosts. Don't just focus on UFOs. Don't just focus on abductions. Don't just focus on cryptozoology, whatever it is. Become familiar with all of it because we're finding a lot of overlaps in many parts of it. And unless you're familiar with the different areas of it, you may not correctly identify what's going on.
Well, you want to have as eclectic an approach as you possibly can and have as many tools in your toolbox, and it's just going to help you out and make you better of an investigator.
Excellent point.
There's a question in the chat room. What has been the most fascinating case you guys have investigated or experienced?
We had one that just stands well above all the rest. It was extremely active. It's called the Park House Haunting. If you go to our website, which is swprg.com, you can actually read the investigation report. It was a house that was owned by an elder, a Mormon elder.
Really?
And he was younger. He was a younger man. Had a wife and like three kids, and he had purchased another home. They had lived there for quite a while and had many times seen things over and over, mostly a young boy that would run up and down, or I'm sorry, back and forth upstairs, and people would see him all the time. And they'd moved out and they had rented the place out. And over the years, the renters would tell them, you know, we keep seeing this really young boy running around in the house. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, yada, yada. And so he was going to sell the house, but before he did, he was signing the closing papers on Monday. He called me on a Wednesday and said, is there any way you could come in and take a look at the place? Because, you know, we haven't lived there for quite a while, but our renter said that there's been things going on, and I just kind of like to know before we sell the place. So I said, sure, you know, we'll come in and do a pre-investigation on Friday and kind of see if it's something that we want to look into. If it is, we'll be back on Saturday. So we went there and, you know, did a pre-investigation, which is just a simple baseline reading and, you know, get some eyewitness accounts and talk to the owner firsthand and just kind of take a tour of the place and that type of thing, just basics. And so, you know, being that we only had, you know, a few days to do this, we thought, yeah, you know, we could do an investigation. So I got a small team together, very small actually, and we went back on Saturday. And the homeowner, the elder Mormon guy, he was giving me a tour. He took me upstairs. We were just the only two up there, and we went into the children's room. There was only upstairs two rooms, the children's room and the master bedroom. And we went into the children's room, and he opened the closet door, and we looked in, and he's explaining, this is a closet, this is the kids' room, blah, blah, blah. And as we were standing there, we both heard behind us, sounded like a little kid.
Doing what?
I'm sorry?
What you heard? Okay. What exactly?
Hey.
Oh, hey. Okay.
Hey. Just like that. And it was a quick little whisper that was a little kid. I looked at him and I go, did you hear that? And he goes, yeah, I did. Somebody just said, hey. So, of course, I turn my back and I run, or I turn around and I call, you know, hey, is there anybody upstairs? And nobody was upstairs. And I hear Dave yelling, I'm just coming up now. He's just stopping up the stairs. I'm like, okay. All right. So he's bringing up our DED system, which is our Direct Environmental Acquisition Data Logging System. It's a computer system that we've created that collects a variety of different environmental conditions and data logs it onto a laptop computer. Well, actually, two now. And so we set it up in the master bedroom, and I thought, you know, we kept hearing little things. And so I thought, oh, okay, I'm gonna test this a little bit, you know. And so Dave set up the DED system and had it running. And I said, okay, you know, just me and Dave were the only two upstairs. And I said, I heard you. You know, if you can make yourself known, do it. I said, can you make yourself known? And we both heard, yes.
Wow, audibly, huh?
Yes. And
AVP.
It was very, very apparent. And so we got very excited at that point. And it was interesting because we were getting spikes in the electromagnetic fields and dips in the radiation when these things were happening. So we were able to correlate all of this evidence that was going on and date time stamp everything. So we were able to look back on it and see that, you know, at that time when we heard that, we would actually get changes in the environment. So the whole night progressed like that, and it was just one instance after another. I think at one point, Dave, we were standing up, and David felt like this poke in his back. He felt like somebody just jabbed him in the back. And he turned around. He thought it was me, and I was like 10 feet behind him. Nobody was around. Started having these really cold, cold, bone-chilling, this really cold, I don't know, he said it started on his arm, and I would touch his arm, and it felt cold, but it wasn't like obviously like strong, but I could, it was really strange because we used the ion counter, and the ion counter went crazy, just went huge. And as we know, you know, a strong positive ion count can create negative feelings in people and vice versa. That's why we use those ionic breezes in our houses, because we don't get that negative feeling in from that. Anyway, getting back to the case. So I started following him around with the ion counter, and it was actually surrounding him. It would just kind of move all the way around him, and he was feeling like this really cold presence. So what we've, you know, what we found is that when people are having those cold spots that they feel, those ghost spots or whatever you want to call them, it's not actually temperature cold. It's either static electricity that's causing it or ion. And people are just perceiving that as a cold temperature.
Excellent.
And the whole night progressed, just one curious case after, or just one thing after the another. And we've got all the data. Please look on the webpage and take a look at the
Yeah, excellent. Sounds great.
Fascinating.
So we've got just a few minutes left, and we've been talking about bringing credibility to the field. And we've talked about a lot of different things. Jen, you want to just sum up in kind of a bit of a nutshell, what do you think researchers can do to overall bring more credibility to the field?
Okay. Well, I think, like we talked about, believer versus skeptic versus cynic. Know who you are, you know. Know where you stand, and know where the other people in your team stand. You know, are you a believer, are you a cynic, or are you skeptical, which is probably right down the middle, which is probably where we'd like you to be. You know, don't believe everything you see, but then again, you know, question a lot of things, too. Use the scientific method. If you say you're scientific, it doesn't mean walking around with fancy equipment.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean you're scientific. You know, use the scientific process. It's out there. If you're not familiar with it, look it up on the internet. It is, you know, it's what every scientist uses, and it's the best way to gather correct information and data. Investigation skills, you know, learn about a variety of different ways to, you know, to gather information, whether it be eyewitness, just sit down and talk to somebody, or whatever the case may be. Just, you know, learn about how to be a good investigator, just quick investigation skills. As Dave said, you know, use your equipment. Learn it, know what it does, how you use it, and how to interpret the data. It's very important. Be well educated. You know, become extremely well educated and well rounded, like you said, in the field. Know a variety of different areas.
Good points, Dave. You want to add anything?
I think Jen pretty much hit all the topics there. Much in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, let me also add some other things that we had mentioned too, just by summation. And that is to, you know, associate with the right people.
Yes.
You know, get involved with people who are credible, who are grounded, who are rational and reasonable, who are open-minded, yet not gullible or credulous. And I'll tell you right now, you know, if a group you're thinking about joining, go to their website, check it out. First place you want to go is to the gallery. If they have a slew of orb pictures posted, you want to move on.
Good point. Oh, amen. Brother, yeah, amen.
Yeah. Brother, because orbs are not spirits. And even if they were, how would you prove it? You know, the preponderance of evidence is that they are airborne contaminants. So just move on. And also, you know, if you get a group who is heavily involved in demonology, honestly, that's a religious-based thing. If that's your cup of tea, more power to you, but that's not where serious researchers go. Anybody who's credible and professional and really wants to make some headway in this field is going to look at things scientifically and not make judgments based on beliefs. They're going to have some, at least some strong anecdotal evidence or circumstantial evidence. It's about as good as it gets in these parts here. So, you know, associate with the right type of people. And come join us at Paranexus. This is where I do my spiel. You know, come join us. I made this announcement at the outset of this program, but we have more people on. We just incorporated as a nonprofit, and we are going to apply for our 501c3 tax-exempt status here in the next month or so. And so, you know, we're looking for members. We're looking for people who want to grow and learn. You know, we have courses as well online that you can take. There's a lot of good information posted by a lot of good people. We have blogs. You know, we have a weekly newsletter. And, you know, I think you knew this, Jen, but your article went out in our newsletter this week.
Right.
One of them. And, you know, Dave Desjardins doing a great job with the newsletter. So, you know, there's a lot of good things going on, and this is an organization that's absolutely serious about this field and is more than willing and encourages sharing and working together in cooperative, you know, collaboration. I mean, we're open to that. This
Excellent.
Is no competition.
Right. There are some main, you know, big TV people out there who, you know, claim if you're going to be part of their group, you can't share information with anybody but them.
Yeah.
You know, good point there. Kudos to that.
And so, and you should go check out Jen's site. You want to give them your URL and mention your book and that sort of stuff, classes.
It the website is paranormalresearchgroup.com, again, our book is Investigating the Haunted, Ghost Hunting Taken to the Next Level, which you can purchase on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever. Just kind of throw it in there in the search engine and look it up. Also, like I said, if you're interested in having a hands-on class and you're in the Midwest area, please. We do teach at McHenry County College in Crystal Lake, Illinois, and Rock Valley College in Rockford, Illinois. We've got classes coming up this October, actually, we'd be happy to have you.
That's great. And if you guys will hang with us, I wanted to mention, too, before we run out of time, that Paranexus, since we are incorporating and becoming a tax-exempt nonprofit, you know, we're looking for good people, too. We're looking for board members. We're in a special need for somebody who would want to volunteer to be a treasurer, somebody with accounting background, somebody who's, you know, got a good foothold in the field, is interested in it, grounded, stable. If you know of anybody or are interested, visit our website and just check on the About Paranexus link and you'll see open positions. But this is a great opportunity to get involved with Paranexus as staff or board member. We're looking for a media and public relations person, and you know, we'd love to hear from you if you have any interest in that. So
yeah, and if you like a six-figure salary,
yeah,
the place not to be.
Hey, if you want a one-figure salary, I'm sorry. Anyway,
if you want lots of gratification.
Hey, Jen, thanks so much for joining us. We really enjoyed having you.
Well, thanks for having us. We really appreciate the answer.
And Dave. Glad you came, too.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you guys hang on with us for just a moment. Folks, as always, we appreciate our listeners making the time each week to listen. We look forward to next week. Mike Jones will be having his abduction program next week, so please tune in for that. And again, go come visit us at paranexus.org. And with that, we hope everybody has a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Universe.